Last week was the 100th anniversary of the passage of the 19th Amendment, which gave women the right to vote. And almost ever since that time, women have been fighting for an amendment to the Constitution that recognizes their equal rights. And it wasn't until January of this year, 2020, that Virginia ratified the amendment, making it the 38th state and therefore constituting the necessary three-quarters of the states necessary there to amend the Constitution. Why did this take so long? Who and how was this impeded? And why shouldn't this law be passed? Here with us to discuss the Equal Rights Amendment is Dr. Julie Suk, Dean of the Master's Program, Professor of City University of New York. She's an Oxford PhD, a Yale law grad with a bachelor's from Harvard in French and English Literature, just to throw in. And she is the author of the book, We the Women, the Unstoppable Mothers of the Equal Rights Amendment. Dr. Suk, welcome to Karen Conti's show. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me.
And, you know, can we just, the language of the Equal Rights Amendment is fairly simple, is it not?
Yes, it's very short, too. It just says equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex.
So tell me why, in a nutshell, it has taken so long to get to the point where this has become part of our law here in the United States.
So it's taken a very long time because women have actually not had a lot of political power, even though they got the right to vote 100 years ago. That is, even when the ERA was adopted by two-thirds of Congress, there were only 10 women in the House and one woman in the Senate. And it was the women in the House who really rallied hard behind the ERA and were able to persuade the vast majority of their male peers to enshrine equal rights in the Constitution for women.
And what were some, can you explain just briefly to our listeners how the Constitution is amended and what must be done before it is amended?
Well, Article 5 of the Constitution really spells out what the process is for adding an amendment to the Constitution, and it is notoriously one of the most difficult constitutions in the world to amend. It requires two-thirds of both houses of Congress, and once that happens, we're not done. We need three-fourths of the state legislatures to ratify the amendment. And so with that level of consensus required, it's very hard, actually, to get a constitutional amendment passed. And it's certainly hard when you're talking about people who have been excluded from the vote, getting an amendment to guarantee their right to vote. That's the 19th Amendment. And it's been equally hard in terms of equal rights for women, women having been excluded at the founding. In most states' laws, with regard to things like property rights, with regard to equal rights in marriage, these are the kinds of things that women have struggled for a long time and eventually wanted a constitutional amendment to correct.
Let's talk a little bit about what the arguments were. I think of Phyllis Schlafly, and I think of how powerful she was in opposing the Equal Rights Amendment, and people listened to her. And I think traditional women believed that what she was saying was that this Equal Rights Amendment would be harmful to women in the long run. What were some of the arguments she made and some others made to oppose the Equal Rights Amendment?
Well, in the 1970s, even though the Equal Rights Amendment was passed by an overwhelming majority, well over 90% of the vote in both the House and the Senate in 1971 and 1972, when it went to the states for ratification, actually 35 states ratified rather quickly. That's three short of the number needed. But Phyllis Schlafly's Stop ERA movement started to poke some holes in the arguments for the ERA by suggesting that if we got an ERA, it would mean that the law would always have to treat men and women the same under all circumstances, no matter what. And that was actually not really true. That's not even what the proponents of the ERA wanted. But they claimed that if that happened, then women, and particularly mothers and housewives, would lose certain privileges they had under the law and would lose certain protections that they had. And so they got a lot of people worked up about what would be the status of mothers and housewives under the ERA. And this is a very interesting and important point because the proponents of the ERA were actually primarily concerned with inequalities that women faced in society because they were mothers, inequalities that women faced because of women's traditional role in childbearing and child rearing. So they wanted women to have opportunities to be educated, despite the stereotype that women didn't need to have the same opportunities because they would just end up being wives and mothers. They wanted women who were widows to be able to be economically independent by having the same rights to work, for example. And not just widows, but in the 1970s and certainly now, it's absolutely essential, even for married women who are mothers, to be able to participate in the economy. And the proponents of the ERA wanted to make sure that being a mother would not be an impediment to equal participation in economic and political life.
Now, flash ahead. So we've had the last three states have fallen in line, Illinois being one of them. And so January 2020, we now have all of the states ratified. We're still not all the way there yet. Is that right? And I want to simplify this issue because this gets very complicated. But there's still some rumblings that even though we've passed it technically, that it might not go into effect. Can you tell our listeners why that is?
Well, when the ERA was adopted by Congress in 1972, Congress put a deadline on the ratification. It asked the states to deliver their ratification within 7 years. And what's interesting is that Congress put it into a resolution rather than in the amendment itself. And that suggested that that was something that could change, like a deadline. And of course, you know, if you just think about deadlines in life, sometimes they can be changed. And Congress actually did change the deadline once. It passed a resolution in 1978 extending the deadline by another 3 years. So then the deadline became 1982, but no additional states passed the ERA or ratified the ERA by 1982. But for a long time, from 1982 until 2017, no states really took any action on the ERA. But in 2017, despite the deadline having passed a long time ago, Nevada ratified, and then it was followed by Illinois and Virginia in 2018 and 2020. So the rumblings have to do with, can the deadline actually be changed? The House actually passed legislation earlier this year in February, removing the deadline, but the Senate hasn't acted yet. And so the question is, if Congress removes the deadline, could that be sufficient to add the ERA to the Constitution?
Oh, I mean, you know, and then if not, then we start what? All over again. It's hard for me to believe. I guess it's just hard for me to believe in this day and age that there would be politicians who wouldn't face the scrutiny of this. I mean, if a politician stands in the way of the Equal Rights Amendment, it's like saying, I'm for torturing dogs. I mean, you know, it's just, it's the simplest thing in the world to say women have equal rights. What is there to argue with about that? And for a lot of women out there, or a lot of people who are listening might say, well, don't we already have laws that protect women? I mean, you know, we hear about these lawsuits all the time. The 14th Amendment to our Constitution, which was enacted, you know, in the 1868, provides that all people have equal protection under the law, and it has been held to apply to different races and to women. So what is it that the Equal Rights Amendment, in your view, Dr. Sook, would help? What would it add to the mix? And we've got about a minute, and I'm going to take a break.
Okay. Well, everything you've just mentioned, that we have laws that actually prohibit discrimination against women, and the 14th Amendment now prohibits sex discrimination. We have that because of the movement for the ERA in the 1970s. So first and foremost, I think the ERA is important because it would give credit where credit's due. It would make official everything that women have achieved behind the constitutional scenes, and not giving them credit for it is itself a form of sex discrimination, I think. And furthermore, it's a tool that would give lawmakers, lawyers, and judges the possibility and just something extra they could use to make equality real for women on the ground. And the ERA would add extra protection only to the extent that lawmakers, lawyers, and judges would be willing to use that tool to pass legislation really addressing violence against women, really correcting equal protection jurisprudence, which hasn't gone far enough to protect mothers and pregnant women from discrimination by the state.
We're here with Dr. Julie. So could you hold for just a minute and maybe finish up on the other side of my break?
Sure.
Okay, great. We're going to be taking your legal questions, too, so get them in. We're still going to be talking to Dr. Sook, and then I'll start answering those questions. You'll talk to Ben, give the facts, and get you on the line, 312-981-7200. It's August 23rd, and it's a nice Sunday afternoon, and we hope to keep you for another hour. This is the Karen Conti Show on WGN. We're here with Dr. Julie Sook, who is the author of the book, We the Women, the Unstoppable Mothers of the Equal Rights Amendment. Dr. Sook, this whole idea with COVID is going on, and I'm watching women who are saying, I have to stay home now because my kids are remote learning and I can't leave my kids at home. Is this going to be, you know, in your view, and you're a scholar and you're a lawyer, but you watch these issues, is this going to be very harmful for women in the long run, do you think?
So you mean the COVID crisis?
Well, the COVID crisis in that, it seems to me that a lot of people are working remotely and some people are losing their jobs because they can't go back to work because their kids are at home. And a lot of this is falling on women. You know, it's not to say that some men are not staying at home with their kids who are working remotely, but a lot of the women are having to take the heavy oar here.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And when the ERA was actually adopted first in 1970 by the House by an overwhelming majority, there was a huge women's strike for equality on August 26th of 1970. And we are approaching the 50th anniversary of that strike. And they called for the ERA as well as child care because they believe that without child care, any promise of equal opportunity or non-discrimination against women was an empty promise. And I think we're really feeling that in a very intense way with the COVID-19 crisis, because first of all, a very large percentage of essential workers are women. So if they're going to be performing this essential work without public support for childcare and education, they are going to be hit in very important and devastating ways. I think for a lot of women who have the luxury of being able to work at home, there are many studies now that are showing that women are taking on the disproportionate share of child caregiving at home, not only for children, but also for elderly relatives and other people who are sick. And these are things that actually will diminish women's ability to continue to participate at the same level in economic and political life. So I think that we need to pay attention to these issues if we're fully committed to equal rights. And it's something that is a legacy of the original adoption of the ERA 50 years ago.
And you said that so nicely. And I tell my clients in my family law cases who are female, you know, you got to be careful because you don't want to create a financially dependent relationship. Because as we all know, divorces happen 50% or more. And sometimes, you know, divorces happen. So when you are out of that workplace for a period of time, that's not to say that raising children is not extremely important and staying at home might be a great decision for you, but you've got to be careful because of that financial dependence, which then creates problems for you and even your children down the line. Dr. Julie Sook, we've got literally 60 seconds here, but are we ready for a female vice president and are we ready for a female president?
Absolutely. I think we were ready a long time ago. So I think we're definitely ready in 2020. I think that Kamala Harris is an excellent candidate, largely because her story really reflects the American story. She is the child of immigrants. She is also an African-American woman, and she's had tons of experience in government at both the state and federal level. And so I think that this is exactly what America needs right now.
Thank you so much for saying that, and I hope that you're right. Dr. Julie Sook, thank you so much for joining us. Read the book. It's an excellent book, We the Women, the Unstoppable Mothers of the ERA. This is the Karen Conti Show on WGN.